Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The picture on the front page of the New York Times yesterday took our breath away. An Afghan woman, her head covered like Mary, in a dark hut looking down at her baby, a little bear on his fleece blanket. The child has frozen to death. Andrea Bruce took the picture for the Times. Rod Nordland has been reporting the story of the 24 children who've died from the cold in two refugee camps right in the shadow of the Afghan capital, Kabul. With $3.5 billion in humanitarian aid and $58 billion in development aid over 10 years, how can this be? We reached Rod in Kabul. Rod, why are these Afghans in refugee camps?
Most of them are war refugees from Helmand province and Kandahar province in southern Afghanistan.
Well, and why are the babies and toddlers freezing to death? I mean, you list them by name, twin girls who were 3 years old, the baby in the picture yesterday, Khan Mohammed, 3 months old. Why are they freezing to death?
Well, often you'll find four people or more sharing one or two blankets in temperatures that are in the mid-teens Fahrenheit. Many, many of the huts and tents that they're in have no heating sources at all. And many of them go out, for instance, and just gather scraps of paper and even plastic soda bottles and so on to burn, toxic as it is, and they have nothing else.
Well, and you've been doing some terrific reporting on this, and you had a meeting with some of the elders of the camp, of one camp, including fathers of the toddlers who have died, and they said that when you have many people sharing blankets, if the covers get pulled off the infants, they don't know how to get them back.
That's right, and they don't know how to ask for help, and they certainly can cry, but as one family told me, our kids cry every night because they're so cold, and after a while, the parents are so exhausted they fall asleep, and the child becomes disentangled from the communal blanket and freezes to death.
Yeah. This is the worst winter people have seen in 20 years. And they admitted to you that many of them had gotten warm clothing and blankets from aid agencies months ago, but not knowing how cold it was going to be, they sold it.
Right. They sold it because they didn't have enough food or they didn't have enough money to buy medicine or for any number of other reasons, maybe even some frivolous reasons. And a lot of aid groups have become frustrated with them because they've repeatedly taken aid to them and then stuff gets sold off. But, you know, there's still the fact that these children are really vulnerable and in way too many cases they're dying.
And here you have government officials, one of them saying to you, I'm not saying they're lying, but I'm skeptical that these children are freezing to death. Why?
Well, I think they're embarrassed that this is happening right under their noses and nothing has been done about it. And, you know, they're in denial. So they explain it away, saying, oh, they must have just died of disease and this is just a coincidence. And how do we know they died of exposure to the cold? Because nobody gave them an autopsy and no doctor looked at them. Well, there's no doctor to look at them in most cases. And the families, you know, following Islamic tradition, want to get them buried as soon as possible. One official, the head of the disaster agency, even said, well, you know, it's very suspicious that they all died at night. Well, if that's not a moronic statement, I don't know what is. You know, of course, the temperatures are 20 degrees colder at night.
Well, the officials also told you that they were, you know, upset about what they see as this one-sided reporting of the deaths without reporting how much aid has been given to the residents. Government officials also tell you they offered some of these camp residents land to resettle on back in Helmand province where they came from, also gave them homes to live in this area, rental homes. But then the camp dwellers subletted the premises for income instead of living out of them. So what do people in the camp say to those accusations?
Well, about the rental housing, they say that's a lie. And I don't know the truth of it. There may be have been some cases where some rental homes were given to refugees and something like that happened. But I haven't seen any proof of that. And the government's credibility, I think, on this is fairly low. As for going to land plots in Helmand, that's true. The government has provided land plots for them in places like Goresh and Sangin District and other places that are crawling with Taliban and still in the middle of a very hot war. And these people do not want to go back.
What does this tell us, if anything? Is this a a cautionary tale about Afghanistan itself, about Kabul, about the leadership there. I mean, what does it illustrate?
I don't think the Afghan government's the only one to blame. I mean, there is this huge international presence in Afghanistan, and why hasn't the international community done something more about it? Well, the short answer is that these people have become victims of a kind of bureaucratic catch-22 in which, because they've been in these camps for a long period of time, that's not considered a humanitarian crisis because it can't be an emergency if it goes on year after year. So they're not entitled to humanitarian aid. The other form of aid, what they call development aid, they're not entitled to that either because development aid is for building cities and schools. And also a lot of the humanitarian community has taken the lead of the government in which the government says, well, this problem shouldn't be here because these people should go back to the land that we put aside for them in Helmand or Kandahar or whatever.
And the government says, and if you give them aid, then they will stay there and more people will come there.
Right. And, there's probably some truth to that. But that just looks past the fact that there are these very vulnerable people, and these children especially, that need some kind of aid to get through this crisis.
How are these families handling this? We started with the family of Saeed Mohammed again, losing his eighth child to the cold. He lost other children to illness, and his remaining daughter, Ferosa, you meet her. She's 10. She's standing there staring at her baby brother being swaddled for burial, and she's sick. She's coughing. How are they handling this?
You look into the eyes of this father, and you feel like you're just looking into the just black heart of despair. It just seems completely without any kind of hope at all. And it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking.
Well, your writing about it has gotten a lot of response locally, and you've heard from Americans. Lieutenant General John Bradley, who is retired from the Air Force and started a charity, an American charity, who's diverting winter aid from his charity to people in the camps. But can it be changed?
Yes, enough aid can get into the camps to save these kids' lives. And sadly, all these groups, including some of the ones that we've written about, none of them have managed to move quickly enough to get basics like firewood and food into the camps. They have their rules and their policies and their procedures, and they have to meet with their boards. And so far, the only aid that has gone into the camps in the last week has been from private individual businessmen. And these are Afghan businessmen. And I think that's kind of a sorry commentary. We have this massive aid effort, and they're not able to respond to an emergency of this degree.
Rod Nordland of The New York Times, along with photographer Andrea Bruce, he has been telling the story of two refugee camps in Kabul in which young children are freezing to death. Rod, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.